everybody. Welcome to the Truth Will Set You Free Show, brought to you by TOB TV and the Liberty Beacon Project. I am your host, Linda Diane Watley, and yes, I am happy for the guests we have today. I have to tell you, Gabriella, I know I'm supposed to say her full name. She's going to have to help me. And when she says it, you're going to say, okay, Linda, I get this. Okay, Gabriella. Hello, Gabriella. What's your name?
Hello, Linda. My surname is Guglielminotti Trivel. Easy, isn't it?
I told her I thought she was speaking Chinese or Japanese. But just as fascinating as her name is, Gabriella is a very fascinating, multi-dimensional person. She intrigues me. I am so glad to have her on our show today because it's not every day that you meet a woman that is as adventurous as she is. She's very adventurous. She's very spirited. She was born in Italy. She resides in the United Kingdom. She is a person who studied foreign languages at the University of Turin. She is a qualified master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP. She traveled Europe, Asia, Africa, America, and Antarctica. Yes, she's been there. And she's a speaker, a visionary, and she's a coach who helps women gain confidence, and authority, and fulfillment in their life by knowing their bodies better. She deals with the cycle, the menstrual cycle of women's lives, and she also not only shares that with the women, she also shares it with their partners, and I find that very fascinating. She loves to fly, yes, and she has written an amazing book that still has me thinking about being cold, being so alive too, because she went to Antarctica and she wrote about that. We're going to talk about her book and the things she learned there. But first of all, we're just going to say hello. How are you doing, Gabriella?
Hello, Linda. I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
And you also have a site called Flying Inspiration, and that's basically for women, right, to have a space to come to.
Well, yeah, as you said, I'm a bit adventurous, so, and I'm looking into something that normally people don't want to look into. So, I got intrigued by the female cycle in 2009 because I came across this psychotherapist called Alexandra Pope. At the time, I'd been experiencing my cycle being erratic, and so I listened to a conference call with her, then I went to her workshop, and I was hooked. By hooked, I mean there was something very deep inside myself resonating with this, and so before I knew, I helped her out for a while, and then I realized that I had to go solo, meaning, you know, there are many of us out there don't know anything about it. And so I thought, it's a good challenge for me.
I mean, that's right. That is an area you don't hear about every day. Yeah. I mean, you really became intrigued with the menstrual cycle. What was so fascinating about it?
Well, because I was always having a regular cycle, and then I went through a kind of traumatic time, a stressful time in my life, when I was made redundant at work, and also my marriage finished, so I lost also my kind of social background, because it was partly related to my work and to my marriage. So I felt like at ground zero, right? Meaning, you know, nothing was standing for me anymore. And possibly this time of stress caused me having my cycle becoming erratic, so not regular. And so because I had been in personal development since my 20s, so I realized that anyway, if I wanted to understand more about this, I shouldn't really just go to a normal doctor or a gynecologist, because they wouldn't really answer my questions. So I kind of expressed this desire to be enlightened about this and then let it go, as you would. And so years later, I came across this lady, and I found it fascinating to find out that actually, for a woman, it is very important to understand what her cycle is and the energy that takes her every month into, because otherwise, if you are not aware of it, what happens is you become a victim, like many of us out there that don't know, or me before knowing. And so I find it, I'm a born investigator, I like looking into things, not believe anything and just looking, investigate. And so I found this very satisfying to all of a sudden in my early 40s to understand why so many things in my life happen in a certain way, and it all makes sense. And so I kind of realized all of a sudden, how come I wasn't told these things when I was a teenager? It would have made my life so much easier.
Like what, for instance, did you find out could have made a difference?
Yeah, something very simple and practical. Now, in a nutshell, during the month, a woman goes through four distinctive seasons. I call them seasons because they are very similar energetically to the four seasons of the year. So the pre-ovulatory phase, which is the first week after that a woman goes into after finishing the bleeding week. So it's a pre-ovulatory week, is similar to the energy of spring. Then the following week is the ovulatory week and is similar to summer. And then we have the third season, which is autumn, which coincides with the premenstrual phase and has the energy of autumn. And then when a woman bleeds, is similar to winter. Now, you might think, well, what's big about it? Well, it simply is very big, because it means that as women, we don't live a life which is linear, which is consequential. We cycle, basically, really, literally, every month. So it means that in during those 4 weeks of the month, generally speaking, because obviously every woman has a slightly longer or shorter cycle, okay, we are all different, but it doesn't matter, I'm speaking generally at the moment. So it means that actually we go through energies that are different. It means that we think differently, we feel differently, we act differently. We tend to do things in spring that we would never even think to do when we are in our autumn. So knowing this is very useful, it's very practical, because then you can plan as much as you can. Obviously you can't totally plan life, but it means that you can plan your commitments according to the energy of your cycle as much as you can. Of course, not you can't plan everything, but the fact that you will be aware of which energy you will be in that time, it really helps. Well, first of all, like everything is awareness. If you're aware of anything that happens to you, if you're really aware of what's going on with you inside and as a consequence outside, it makes everything different, doesn't it? It slightly makes it easier. Of course, you still have to do all the things you have to do, And, you know, some stuff in life, maybe we don't like it, some other things we prefer them, etc. But, though, it's a you conduct yourself, you have a different demeanor. And then we come to the second thing, which is very practical. It has an enormous impact for a woman on her self-worth and self-esteem, and discovering her inner authority. I mean, I think women do need a bit of that, especially these days. Yes, of course, we had the flower revolution, the 60s, the pill revolution, all sorts of things, the feminist movement, but how are we as women, as a gender, how much advanced have we? I'm not sure. Yes, of course, it's better. We are not burned on the stake any longer. Well, I give you that, but there are other things, you know, they are very subtle, and, you know, they still repress us, they keep us in check. And I think it's time for women to wake up a bit more, don't you?
Well, how do the men react to the information that you share?
Well, funnily enough, I think men are quite ready for knowing more, because if you think about it, men are at the receiving end of it all. I mean, every man comes out of a woman's womb, right? Has got a mother. So, and inside the genes are half, you know, the one of the mother. So, anyway, for men to understand what goes on in a woman's mind, body, emotions, and psyche during a month is terribly interesting and useful, especially to if in an intimate relationship, for instance, or even just dealing with your daughters or at work with your colleagues, because, I mean, we all live together, right? So it's very empowering, because instead of walking on eggshell, so to speak, and guessing what is going on over there, what did I do wrong, what did I say wrong, whatever, to know what actually, why, you know, in certain weeks a woman reacts more, possibly is more prone to react maybe to certain things in a certain way than in others. It's very useful, don't you think?
So, what are the major tools that you share with them that has made a difference across the board for all of them?
Well, you know, the intimate relationship are always tricky, aren't they, for everybody? And I know, I went through divorce myself, and I know that if I have had this information earlier, I would have, well, first of all, I would have definitely grown up with so much more self-esteem and sense of inner authority, for sure. And so possibly I wouldn't have dated certain men, first of all. And second, in my marriage, knowing my cycle would have helped me to possibly, you know, choose better when to talk to my husband if there were things that were clear, that had to be, you know, cleared out, clear the air, or important things to discuss. Because, of course, you want to make your life easier, so there's no point in, well, there is a point to maybe, if you, the only week in which you feel strong enough to speak up your truth is during your inner autumn, fine. But when a woman is in her inner autumn, she might be a bit abrupt or maybe too direct. So maybe, according to the relationship she's got with her partner, it might be not the best time to talk. You know, maybe you can make notes and write down what is coming up for you, you know, and then you might tackle the issues when you are in your spring, when you are full of enthusiasm, when you are not so tender, emotionally, you know, and also psychologically, you feel more stable in string. So, you know, why not? Why not make your life easier? And then there is also aspects that we, not in our society, I mean modern Western society, we are lost, you know, the sacredness of it. Because in UK, you know, it's commonly known as the curse. I don't know in the States, but I mean, it's given all sorts of names, but it's a bit silly and short-sighted because nobody would be alive without it. So,
that's true.
Yeah, so, you know, this type of mysteries that were in the past dealt with a sense of, they were considered like a sacred aspect of life rather than something that can be inconvenient to our modern times, you know. Yes, because a woman has to be productive all month long, every day, every week, every week of the month, every month of the year, and we know this is not sustainable for anybody, really. Man or woman, young or adult or old person or animal or human being. So, if we could regain that sacredness and that respect and that devotion towards life. I like call it life, you know, you can call it whatever you prefer to call it, but higher intelligence or whatever, that makes everything go, work, you know. I think we would, there would be a lot to gain. And besides, during the menstrual week, or I call it inner winter, you know, it's a very important time for a woman, because it's a time when a woman comes to herself. So if she has this awareness and consciousness about it, she would take time out and she would reflect more about what comes to her and what she feels. Maybe the dreams she dreams. We become very psychic during that week, and naturally, so we have access more easily to our unconscious, you know. Our conscious and unconscious become very, very good friends for a week. So why not taking the advantage of it rather than, you know. So by respecting it means that if you feel tired, you just rest, and you go into your cave, meaning, you know, if you need to sleep, fine. If you prefer to go and see your sisters in a red tent, you do that, or anything else that's suitable for you. But have that reverence of considering that's your time to enjoy. Also, physically, a woman, besides becoming more psychic, she has access to ecstatic states of, you know, profound, deep joy, and like ecstasy. But it's there for you if you are aware enough to feel them. If you conduct business, as always, you know, be a bit difficult.
So where do the PMS come in through the cycles? Because you're saying it's different seasons of it. So
yeah.
Do PMS come in a particular season, or is it just stress?
Depends what you mean with PMS. Yes, I know what you mean, meaning PMS stands for premenstrual syndrome, or also called maybe at times PMT, premenstrual tension. Now, why so many women have suffered under that, because of it, and what is this all about? Now, during the inner autumn, a woman starts, it's the third week, so it's the week when a woman starts having less energy, and from the after having lived the spring and the summer, very active season, okay, or week phases. very active, very social, very much outward interested, you know, into the world. The inner autumn is the phase, is the week for a woman when the energy changes. It's like in autumn, you know, like now you really feel it in the air. At a certain point you feel the chill. And so as a consequence of that, automatically you tend to, well, dress more warmly, but maybe because you start noticing that the season is changing and the daylight is reducing, you tend to be more indoors. And also it's a season, really practically, according to history and the history of civilization, when we were more kind of in contact with nature, is the season par excellence of harvest, the harvest before the winter. So it would be very important to be quite focused and to not to waste time. You don't have much time, the winter is coming. So it's that time when you review, when you fill up your larder, you know, to have it full and ready for winter. And so that's the type of energy, right? Just to give you the idea. So going back to your question about PMS, what is it and all the rest of it, it's a time when a woman starts looking inside more rather than outside. So if during the spring and the summer she has been very social and maybe very career focused or work focused and all the rest, during that week of autumn and then winter, she's definitely concerned, focused and interested by stuff that regards her, concerns her and her inner life. So as a consequence of that, obviously it doesn't make much sense to say yes to everybody. It doesn't make much sense to have a never-ending social calendar filled with stuff, because then you start feeling the stress simply because you don't have enough time to feel your duty, you know, your personal stuff, because your body calls you to it, okay? And the rest. And so a woman say more no's and less yeses. So are we respecting this now? It's not acknowledged, it's not validated. This, a woman has to say yes all the time to everybody, of course. But who says so? Definitely not nature, is it? Not even us, if we really are honest with ourselves and we feel our body, you know, our body just has got its own clock.
Right. So, you know, the way, you know, I was looking at how you encourage a woman to actually fall in love with the process, like embrace it, like celebrate it, you know. So when you get to this place with it, eventually it's going to leave you. So is that a traumatic moment also for a woman, that now their friend is leaving?
Are you meaning when the cycle finishes?
Right.
With menopause?
Right.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you what are my guesses, but I'm not there yet. But I'm feeling closer to that moment. I mean, like everything in nature, in life, has a beginning and an end. So it's up to us to interpret the way we want to. You know, the year is fascinating when we have four seasons, because it's changing. If we were in a constant summer, I don't know how much we would appreciate that. And I lived for 3 months or longer at the tropics, and I can tell you, experienced firsthand, having been born in Europe, so having experienced the four seasons all my life, how wearing it becomes, you know, to always have sunshine. And also, it's just like everything, you know, if you eat it every day, you like it less and less. If you drink it every day, you smell it every day, it's the same. So, What's happening for women at that time? Well, if you have joyfully embraced your cycles from the beginning and lived through, because it's really a kind of a personal development course, you know, for a woman, if you become very, very tuned in and you experience different sides of yourself, basically you experience different for different women, you know, that always see you, but every month. So you can imagine what kind of tiring exercise is if you consider that a woman, roughly, at least, will bleed for 30 years, you know. So if you have this course, let's call it course, for so long, and you really made the most out of it, you should come to the end of it, and like everything else in life, you celebrate it. But if this hasn't happened, because simply you didn't know, or, you know, it could be that it might be more traumatic, more complicated, you might have physical impediments, let's call them like this, maladies or whatever. But again, the official medicine medicates women, you know, like medicates the cycle, which is a natural thing, but he considers it like kind of almost, I think we will reach the edge of lunacy, really. I mean, being pregnant, giving birth, bleeding is a natural thing. So, but in our society has become also antiseptic and all medicated and all treated with gloves and white gowns, and instead of seeing the mystery of all that, if you consider everything, every aspect of it, like a problem or possibly a potential problem, then what do you think your body will feel, or your psyche, or call it whatever you want to call it? I'd be pissed off, wouldn't I? I would be. And so then he has its own revenge. I mean, I try to make it as a joke, but I wonder, is there a coincidence that so many women these days, they suffer so much of stuff like PMS and then the menopause and all these things, or is it a coincidence, or is just us having lived for too long, so thousands and thousands of years in repression, instead of just celebrating the beauty of life? At the end of the day, it was designed by something, whatever it is. I mean, nature has good success rate, right? Much better than our single successful life or not, you know. I mean, nature's been around for a while. So it designed us in this way. Maybe there is a higher beautiful intention behind it. I don't know. I can only tell you what I think about this, but I feel the magic of it rather than the inconvenience.
Yes, that's the way it should be anyway. I also want you to share with us, what made you decide to go to Antarctica?
Well, that was kind of a strange thing. Well, I was mentioning earlier that I went through between 2005 and 2007 through very stressful 2 years because my marriage was on the rocks, and I had reached that point of irretrievable situation. You know, when you just think, okay, that's it, it's done. I can't go on with this. So it's always painful, like every end. Or break up in relationship or anything that ends in life. So, and at the same time, I also was maybe redundant at work, so I couldn't really cling on that time. I didn't know what to cling on anymore. So, I faced the legal sides of it, that's not much easier and better than the rest, the emotional part of it. And so it was long because basically my husband didn't want to divorce even if he started the proceedings. So it wasn't very clear within himself. But anyway, I became very clear that it was the right thing to do. So after those 2 years that we faced the legal proceedings, we were living split under the same roof, which wasn't fun either. So when everything came to an end after 2 court hearings, I felt a bit of a relief. And at the same time, I heard through a friend that there was this event with different speakers in London, happening in London. There was this chap called Peter Bland, who is Australian, who was actually looking for people to go with him to Antarctica. He had already been to the North and South Pole himself, and he was now taking people to Antarctica, to go to Antarctica. And the purpose of this crazy trip was to face fears and limiting beliefs. We all have some of those, right? And so I thought, woo, woo, woo. As if I hadn't had enough of challenges, I thought, woo, that's for me. Well, first of all, I had trained recently in neuro-linguistic programming, which is very much, a psychology that pushes you to test yourself, and to get to know yourself better and all the rest. So obviously I was feeling the call of being even more an investigator about myself. And second, I hate cold weather. So, and it's not a destination I would have chosen left to my devices. But what for me was the big appeal, it was the fact of seeing nature maybe almost incontaminated or uncontaminated. So that really appealed to me, and so I had a good chat with this chap, and so I signed up. Before I realized how crazy it was, I just but the trip was happening 9 months later. Ha. And those 9 months, I can tell you, it was hell. Because of course our psyche, our mind is designed in a way that, if we go in circle, we think and rethink and rethink the same stuff over and over again. And so in those 9 months, of course, I tried to eat properly, have a clean diet, more than normal, and to jog, to be in shape, and all the rest of it. But more than anything else, my mind was going to, why on earth did I sign up for something so stupid? And second, I was thinking, oh, what will be my challenges? I'm an adventurous person myself, so I was thinking, what can it be for me? I am fine with the outdoors, ice climbing, crazy stuff, even if I've never done it before, but so what can it be, But I knew, because the intention, for that trip was that, to face the unknown, your fears, generally fears are very emotional, are irrational, so. And so I knew that would be the right one for me, and actually that was. Life knows best, right?
Okay, so you're on the trip. What's the first thing you realize?
Say it again. What was the first thing?
Okay, you're on the trip now. You're out there in Antarctica.
Yes.
What is the first thing you realize?
Well, it was on a ship that was actually designed for scientific research. So hull with a strengthened hull, meaning that it can not an icebreaker, but a ship that can go in those waters. And it was leaving. We left Ushuaia, which is the southernmost part of Argentina, and we crossed the Drake Passage, which is that bit of sea that divides Antarctica from Southern America, and then we went down the Antarctic Peninsula. So What was the first thing? Well, well, the first stop was in the section island, which is a volcanic island that is a sunken caldera, meaning the volcano exploded many centuries ago and basically sank into the sea. So there is still the you know, the volcano that is under the water. So you have the, like a circle, right? And it was used in the 19th century as a whaler station to slaughter as many poor whales as possible. That was that back then. Humankind thought it was very clever to do. But anyway, and the first test was I swam into the sea. Well, because it's a volcanic place. We dug up like a pool on the beach, and the water that comes out is warm. So the idea was to go into the warm water and then jump into the sea. But by the time I arrived, because I went off exploring a bit, and then when by the time I came back, and the pool on the beach had already been exposed to the normal temperature for long enough to be just lukewarm. So it was snowing. I took off all my layers. It felt a bit unnatural, I have to say. And I jumped into this little puddle, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is not warm, so I'm going to jump into the sea. But I knew I wanted to do it. I wanted to do it so much that more than anything else in the world. So I had already prepared myself that, you know, whatever would happen, I would do it. And so I jumped into the sea, even if I wasn't warm by the spa, natural spa at all. But I did it, and then I thought, have I done it? I did it three times, just to be sure. You can see it on video. Just to be sure, I did it three times. Just in case I might have in the future that had doubt, you know. And so that was kind of an awakening moment. Definitely refreshing.
Yes. And you know, your book, that's an amazing book you took your time to put together for everybody, Antarctica Odyssey.
Yes.
Yeah. A New Beginning. And that was, oh yeah, oh look at that cover, that's beautiful. But I would recommend to anybody who wants to experience the Antarctica, you will experience, because I'm still thinking about water. I'm still thinking about being cold, but also the purity there.
Well, I have to say that what I've done, I haven't written it immediately, because my purpose was to actually produce a documentary. It didn't happen, especially because the next step, I lost all my gear because of an iceberg sank and partly sank. So basically, the beach where we were... We left our stuff the following day. It was flooding, so my camera were in there. So obviously, salted water with electric stuff, electronic stuff, devices, not very good friends, not a good combination. So I went back with very little footage. And so, again, I went through hell because of that, because that was the thing I wanted the most, and taking pictures of the ice, of these wonderful colors, shades of the blue, and all the rest of it. And you can imagine I had thought about that for 9 months, right? So it was a bit of a shock when that was all kind of taken from me all of a sudden. So, because I couldn't then produce a documentary, and when I was back, 3 years later, I had the awakening, and I thought, why don't you write a book? At least you leave something for future generation if somebody might be curious, right? So what I've done, especially because it was written 3 years later, I really squeezed myself to really well, narrate what happened during the trip, of course, but it's an inner book, it's an inner adventure more than anything. So yes, the app pictures I put in, they're not all mine at all because I lost my gear, but I try to put as many as possible. But the purpose of it is really is an uncensored recollection of what I went through. So I said it all, meaning I didn't censor anything. Even those horrible little thoughts that we all have, we would never ever want anybody to know them. But yes, I put them as much as I could, remember them. And I tried to put succinctly in blue, the color of the sea and the ice and the sky, those major things that I learned. Obviously with hindsight it becomes easier, but one of the thing that for me was the most warming, warming, involving, all encompassing was the contact with nature. Yes, camping on the ice overnight and or being in the water, freezing water, or all those aspects that nature there is kind of in your face.
Wow.
And it's got a purity that it's difficult to explain in words, but like all major turning point that one lives through in life, you know, you have to live them through to be able to know what it means. But if I had to mention one, yes, I would say the contact with nature. Nature's always been my biggest teacher, and that's why I went there. And there was gigantic, and it really makes you feel optional. You're not necessary there. So, even just that is very humbling. And then I had the chance, quite by poor luck, or whatever you want to prefer to call it, I had the chance to see really closely. I was sitting in the zodiac, and I turned, and there was a minke whale that came to the surface. And for a split second, my eyes look into the whale eyes. We look at each other, and it was just... It's one of those moments when everything stops and you just, I don't know how to explain it.
But there's just no way you can come back the same.
No. In a way, you know, certain experiences, they change you and period. So that's why I try to put into words and to describe this, because really, honestly, I thought, I felt the duty, you know, not everybody has got the chance to go through something so amazing. So I learned so much, you know, from documentaries, books, and all sorts of things. I always felt very thankful, you know, to people that themselves out there, I spoke themselves, you know, to any judgment, because, you know, it's just the way it is. But I did. I really always felt very thankful. And so this time around, I felt cold. It's so hard now.
Well, I have to tell you, I appreciate you for creating that book. That book was literally created. It was more than authored. Because, I mean, the photos, the people, the ship you was on, the scenery, the way you wrote it, the things you shared. And one of the things that people walk away with at the end of the book, all the different things you learned about yourself, about a higher power, about God, about life, about nature, its impact and power on our lives. I mean, it was like if you fell asleep and you was in a coma, you was in Antarctica. You lived that experience. That's just how it felt. Like, I mean, it's like it just took me in, and like I really had a really good idea of what you experienced, because you wanted to make sure of that. And it was so refreshing.
Was it? I'm glad
yes,
to hear that.
You did a great job with that book. That book is really something someone should give to someone else as a gift. Because it was soulful too. Because it was times that you had to rise above where you were in your inner self. It wasn't an option. And it was like nature was like, I got this. I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen with you at this given time. You are going to elevate to this place. Because when truth is there and when it's pure, it's going to transcend you anyway. And I compared it to like when soldiers go to war, they're forced to change. They're never ever going to be the same. When you had that experience, that was forced change through beauty. It wasn't through death and war. It was just nature being more powerful than war, causing you to change. Because it affected me, it encouraged me, it strengthened me. Just like you said, it's always. It's just like you said, you're almost like a little dot here. But it's a relief in some ways because you realize you just need to quit thinking you all that and you making all this happen.
It's almost like kind of, you know, Linda, it's almost like, I said warming. It's funny because there is everything is frozen, right? But with warming, it's like the hug of a mother, you know? It wraps around you, you know, and you feel held and you feel loved and you feel heard and you don't need anything else. And that's what, in a way, I sort of felt, you know, for instance, when I was under the tent, I couldn't sleep because it was so cold and it was so loud with all those noises and you feel nothing. But instead of, I can speak about my experience, instead of feeling annihilated by the bigger thing, I felt like it's like a mystic experience, you know. It's like realizing that there's no separation really. There's only separation you want to create or feel. And it's like, yes, maybe the best word would be a mystic experience. Then, you know, it can be different for every person because we all have different beliefs and that's fine. but bottom line, there's one truth, right? So I really like the title of your show because I always agree with that. The truth will always set you free.
Well, tell me this. Okay, I hear that you like to fly. That experience in contrast to going to Antarctica, what was like the difference?
Well, okay, again, life always knows to throw a little challenge at you. I realized I needed to experience flying because I have been calling myself Flying Inspiration, and which was a name that came to me out of the blue when I was in the traumatic period of my life, so it stuck with me. And but it was only in 2008, actually the year I went to Antarctica after towards the end of the year, because of course I found it quite traumatic to go back to normal life, especially in London, a big capital, you know. I mean, no prairies, no iceberg, just people and building after building. So it was really strange for me to kind of readapt to that after that. But I during a move, I just moved to this other place. I was living with this friend, and in one morning I just realized about my name, Fly Inspiration, and so I my mind seems to focus on the first big flying. So I realized I always wanted to learn to fly, but I hadn't done it yet. So it was just like, oh dear, I have to do something about it. And so before I knew, a person that I barely knew called me because he was in Italy, he happened to be in Italy to pick up a little plane. And I was bound to go for my birthday to visit my family. And he wasn't very far away, so we met up in Italy, and so I could fly in this little plane. And I mean, it was just astonishing, just me realizing I need to learn to fly, to look into this. And immediately after, like, out of the blue, these things come along. It was just kind of a bit of a strange coincidence. And besides, also, then I also had the opportunity to try to fly different things, like an autogyro, a little plane, and then what was that, a glider, and then all in a short period of a few months. So it was really strange, right? And so I realized, no, I have to do something about it. And so, trying different way of flying, I realized I wanted to learn to glide, which is, a glider is a plane without an engine, basically. It's pulled in the air first, either by a winch or by a tug, or it's a technical name for a plane that pulls gliders up in the air. And then once you release, then it's down to your skills to how to use the element to be able to keep up, obviously. Yeah, thermic air that goes up, so using those you can stay up, not having an engine. But anyway, so I realized that I wanted to learn to do that, and well, it was a bit scary. Well, first of all, it's very expensive. Second, I didn't know where, and I didn't know anybody. and so it was... But, like the example of the strange coincidence, that as soon as I realized that, an hour or not even an hour, here came this strange call out of the blue, and I had a few days later the opportunity to fly in a plane. You know, it's just almost like when you, if something is on your path, you know, call it the universe or whatever, moves things, you know, and the most amazing things happen. So I eventually, in 2010, started my training. I started my flying training to learn to fly gliders. And that, for me, I haven't finished my license, unfortunately, because of lack of funds. But I still fly with my partner that I met through flying, and so I'm still flying, even if not as a first pilot, but. For me, that was another necessity or a spiritual experience more than anything else, because again, you are, it's the exploration of an element that is normally just the element of birds. And so it's different from walking on the ground. But it's very, for me, it's very mystical. It's almost it's a metaphor, you know, if you think about it, you go in the air, so you see things from above. It's a metaphor for having a bird eye view, you know, kind of seeing the bigger picture or having a better insight about everything. And it's very, it's all encompassing, it's very... And yes, I think it's the best way to describe it is the fact of feeling communion with something bigger than you, because the elements are quite strong, and if they really want, they kill you.
So if anybody wanted to purchase your book, how can they get your book?
Yeah, they can find it on my website, which is Flying Inspiration, written in one word, flying, like the flying, inspiration.com. And there they find all the different sites. It's connected to the Endless Bookcase, which is the publisher site, but also Amazon, Nook, and Kobo. And and there are also other books that I contributed to, and there is another one that is coming out next month that I contributed to as well. So it's not yet published, but I wrote a bit of it. So yes, and please get in contact. I like chatting with people.
So what website, if they wanted to have an interest in your, you know, your interest in women in the cycle and different things like that, how can they contact you there?
Yeah, they can contact me through the website. There's a page, contact me, and they can send me a message. But there are also links, there's my phone number, there's my email address, and there are the links to Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google+, and many others. So it's very difficult not to find me.
Gabriella, you are on the Truth Will Set You Free show. Give us some truth to remember you by.
Okay. I want to leave you with the last sentence of my book, because I think it's very easy to remember, because at the end of the book I made a list of all the different lessons I learned, and for myself first, obviously, and like another Meku, you know, when you are in difficulties, you go there and you go look at the lesson, and you look to one that it could be useful for you in the moment. But then I thought, yes, but we know life knows best, you know, always find the tricky situation. So when all those are not applicable, what shall I do? And so I thought, I should find the jolly one, like the Joker when you play cards, right? The one that goes with for anything. And so I thought, what is it? And so this one came for me, and so I wrote it for, it's the Joker lessons basically, and it goes as like this, just to be sure that I read it right, I use I want to read it just because sometimes memory is funny. Life is a journey of the heart. The mind is only a helper, and the soul is the adventurer. So the mind helps us, but actually our life is the journey of the heart. So follow your heart.
Aww. Well, thank you for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me, Linda. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And you know you have to come back and let me know when your book comes out.
Yes, okay, I will.
All right, you take care.
Thank you so much, Linda. Thank you. You the same.
Bye-bye.
Lots of love from you, Kay.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.